We're back. It's Bridget Leroy, your host of Authors Night 2018 for the East Hampton Library. And we're here at WPPB 88.3 FM, Long Island's only NPR station, which you can also stream at PeconicPublicBroadcasting.org. And I'm here with Ms. Catherine Cermak. Cermak. And you've written this book. You have had the most amazing life.
I've been very lucky.
10 years with Bette Davis, the greatest, one of the greatest film stars ever in history. And you've written a book, Miss D and Me, Life with the Invincible Bette Davis.
Yes, and thank you very much for having us. Miss D would be so thrilled as we spent time on Long Island. Well, and in the book, it tells you family reunion. We were getting ready to make two films. So she's a New England Yankee.
Well, you know, my grandfather directed her in a film in 1932, Three on a Match.
Oh, my God!
My grandfather, Mervyn Leroy. So he had some stories as well.
I am sure.
So what was it like to spend, you were with her for her final 10 years, is that correct?
It's the final 10 years, but the whole story, actually, it's a true story because it's one of my promises to Miss D that she said, Kath, it's a great story. One day, you must tell our story. It's about two women. When I first met Miss Davis, like any 21, 22, you think you know the world.
Right.
And Miss D was 71. I did not know who she was.
You knew she was.
No, I
you
did
didn't
not.
Know who she
no,
was at all.
I did not. I was studying to be a doctor.
Wow.
And when you're studying, I did not grow up in cinema. But I do tell the story, maybe when I was seven, there was, my parents let us, you know, you're in the family and you watch the Baby Jane.
Right.
And all I remember is when, you know, that scene where she takes the lid off.
And there's a rat.
Yes.
Ugh.
And so.
Disgusting.
That scared
Everybody
me.
Knows that scene.
Yes. So anyway, and then the rest, basically, it's really a story of how the young kids, you can learn from the elderly. The elderly can learn from the youth.
Absolutely.
Also, she was so ahead of her time. It's women supporting women. I never asked for a raise. And she knew every time you learn something, all right, you got to the next level. And it's something that actually I have found it goes universal. And she
Absolutely.
Always said back then, women, if women could only be a little more like men, men had the boys' club back then, and they would support.
Of course.
And in her day, it didn't. So in the book, I tell you, she taught me the old Warner Brothers system, how to walk, how to talk. You have a job. She had a job.
Absolutely.
You know, publicizing a book, publicizing a film. Unlike, not everybody does that today.
Well, they were under contract, so my great-grandfather's Harry Warner, who started Warner Brothers, so
Absolutely.
Everybody was sort of owned by the Warners at that time, or MGM, whoever you were under contract, so you know, if they said jump, you said how high, so, but it was also,
Warner Brothers.
Right, yeah. She did, but it was, and it was also massively good training, though, to
the
be,
best.
On your own.
The best, and after, even though she fought Warners and she fought for good scripts, in the end, if you see where she has put her sarcophagus, she respected the Warners.
That's amazing.
And she has, it's overlooking Warner Brothers. And after all her interviews, later, it's like a child. You grow up, you have to cut the umbilical cord. But she never not stopped thanking them.
How are people coming up and asking you all kinds of questions right now about Miss D, Bette Davis?
I think, do you know what? Well, what I have actually, as I'm showing them, I have, because a lot of young kids don't know who she is. So, unless you know Turner Classic Movies.
Well, All About Eve is probably the greatest,
you know,
one of the greatest films ever.
It's what amazes me because the young social media, they're actually, and The Feud, reintroduce
Absolutely.
Miss Davis and Joan Crawford to a whole
Yes.
new generation.
Yes.
That the book has now gone, you know, it's printed in Japan and in France and...
No, you've been wonderful, and I appreciate you coming in and speaking with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's wonderful, and this, where do you go from here? I mean,
well,
this
as
was,
Miss D said, Kath, you got to first tell our story,
yep.
and then you make it into a movie, and so that's what
that's
I mean,
what I
that
meant.
Is it's, because it's a road trip. It's not, but it's about two
I'm
women,
really looking forward to reading it,
and you will hear her voice. And I think every child goes through it, and
yes.
there's so much for even women today. And it's inspiring and encouraging. And what I can't wait to read your book.
I'm not writing
one
a book,
of these
but thank
days,
you.
I know I always said,
I'm always told to do that, and I don't think I'm going to. But thank you so much, Catherine Cermak.
I totally understand.
Miss
it's
D
an honor.
And me. Oh, it's an honor to talk to you.
No,
thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And on the other mic here, I have Philip Keith, who has actually been awarded. You won the USA Book Award for Military History for your last book, Black Horse Riders, but you're here today with Firebase Illingworth.
Yes.
Tell me about this book.
Well, actually, it's a sequel to Black Horse Riders. Right. I started out writing a group of guys. I started writing out a Vietnam trilogy, and this is book two of three. Book three is in process, but after the first two books, and talking with all of the men who were involved in these stories, I was so wrung out that I had to take a little bit of a break.
Wow,
so,
it was that emotionally draining for you.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. I mean, I probably talked with over 300 veterans who were involved in these stories and ended up putting in comments and stories about probably about 100 of them, and Bridget, I mean, you would be amazed at, I mean...
Well, tell me about this in particular. I mean, it says, you know, on the cover, an epic true... This is Firebase Illingworth by Philip Keith,
yeah,
an epic true story of remarkable courage against staggering odds. What was the event?
Well, it takes place on April 1st of 1978, don't you love it, April Fool's Day.
Right.
Where a small company of about 90 soldiers plus about another 50 or 60 support personnel are stuck at a small fire support base in the middle of an open field surrounded by jungle. And in the middle of the night at 2 o'clock in the morning, they get attacked by over 600 North Vietnamese regular soldiers. And for the next several hours, it's a mano a mano tangle to survive, and these guys did incredible feats of bravery. In fact, one Medal of Honor came out of this engagement, a number of Distinguished Service Crosses, Silver Stars, and so on and so forth. So it's one of those stories of a war that people are finally, I think, beginning to appreciate in terms of the fact that, you know, those of us who were there, we did what we had to do.
It's wonderful. Philip Keith with his book Firebase Illingworth. Thank you for coming out and supporting the East Hampton Library. I appreciate you speaking with us.
My pleasure.
And here I have Chris Whipple, one of the hottest tickets in town. With his book, The Gatekeepers.
I don't know about that.
Oh, you are. You're. I think actually, and I'm not. You know, because none of the other authors can hear. I think your dinner sold out first.
Oh, really?
Yes, wow. Even before Alex. That's what I've heard.
Well, it's humbling to be seated with Dr. Ruth Westheimer, who's selling a lot more copies than I am, I think.
Would you like to put these on? It might make it a little more quiet for you. Chris, your book, The Gatekeeper, is how the White House chiefs of staff define every presidency. I have two main questions to ask you, first of all, which is John Kelly, our current chief of staff, do you see him modeling on any previous strategy that's been used by other chiefs of staff?
Well, it's a good question. The last time we had a general as White House Chief of Staff, it didn't end well. That was Al Haig under Gerald Ford.
I'm in control here.
And, of course, that was when he was Secretary of State, when he famously did that. But he lasted about a month under Gerald Ford. It was a disaster, and it wasn't all Haig's fault, but that's another story. As far as Kelly is concerned, I'm not sure he's modeled himself after anyone in particular, but I really think that he has failed in many respects. And, I think early on he managed to make the trains run on time. I think the White House is more orderly and efficient
than it was under
But that's the easy part of being White House Chief of Staff. The hard part is to execute the president's agenda and, most importantly, to tell the president what he does not want to hear. Not an easy thing to do with Donald Trump, but in my view, Kelly has utterly failed to do that.
No, I am very curious. The very first chief of staff was Sherman Adams under Eisenhower, correct?
Yeah.
Why did they even make that a position?
Well, that's the extraordinary, that's the fascinating thing about it. It's a modern invention. There's nothing in the Constitution about it. You're right that Eisenhower essentially created the job by appointing a gruff, tough, former New Hampshire governor named Sherman Adams, who became known as the abominable no man. He was the ultimate gatekeeper. But it was really H.R. Haldeman under Richard Nixon who took the job to another level and really created the template for the modern, empowered White House chief of staff, who does so much more than just control access to the Oval Office.
Right. So who do you think, after Haldeman, who do you think are some of the better? I mean, what defines a good chief of staff?
Well, it's an almost impossibly diverse skill set.
That's what I was thinking. You know, have to kind of be a little bit of everything.
The best in modern history, in my opinion, were probably James A. Baker III under Ronald Reagan, his quintessential first chief of staff. And Leon Panetta, I would put in the same league. He was, of course, Bill Clinton's second White House chief of staff. They had something in common. They were both grounded. They were confident. They'd been around the block. They had nothing to prove. They knew the White House. They knew how to run the White House. But they also understood Capitol Hill. And most importantly, they were people who could walk into the Oval Office, close the door, and tell Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton what they did not want to hear.
And have it greeted with respect.
Yeah.
Which might be something that John Kelly is having a problem with. Well, I mean, I imagine if he's telling, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but if he's trying to tell Donald Trump things that he doesn't want to hear, I don't think that goes well.
Well, in fairness to Kelly, we don't know, of course, what has happened behind closed doors. We don't know how many battles he won in some of those arguments, and perhaps we'll learn more when he's finished and he's talking about it. But it could be that telling Donald Trump hard truths is mission impossible.
Yes.
But in my view, Kelly hasn't tried hard enough.
Well, Chris Whipple, thank you so much for taking the time to come over and speak with us. This is a New York Times bestseller, The Gatekeepers, by Chris Whipple. And like I said, you're the hottest ticket here. So
and Ruth Westheimer. Well, you're kind to say that, but you wouldn't say that if you were sitting with Ruth.
Thank you so much, Chris. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
And now we are moving on. It's Bridget Leroy here, your host for Authors Night 2018 for the East Hampton Library. And we're here now with author Michelle Gerber-Klein. Hi, how are you? And her book, Charles James, Portrait of an Unreasonable Man. Now, I've heard about this book. He was kind of one of the, I mean, he was most popular in the 30s and 40s, correct? I mean, when he was coming up in the fashion industry, or was it 50s?
He was most famous in the 50s because he basically invented the look of the 50s, which was a new look.
Which is what I've seen, all these wonderful kind of satin draped gowns. And
with huge skirts and nipped in waist, very glamorous.
But he was considered somewhat of a, I don't want to say difficult person, but what, I mean, what
he
makes this book
British,
intriguing?
He was a British eccentric.
Yes.
He was a wonderful person. He was totally original, totally self-created, totally fearless, very funny, and incredibly inventive. He had an unbelievable mind. Austin Hurst said he had the most beautiful mind she'd ever met.
That's beautiful. And what made him unreasonable?
Oh, only unreasonable men change the world.
Yes, and unreasonable women as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So I see that there's a section with photos.
Mm-hmm.
Who are some of the people that
he dressed?
Yeah.
Well, Elsa Schiaparelli, who invented fashion in the 30s, who Elizabeth Arden, who started the cosmetic industry as we know it.
So he was a very powerful behind-the-scenes person whose story has really not come out.
Yes, absolutely.
So what made you want to tell his story?
I saw tapes that he made just before he died, and he totally intrigued me because he was such a mixed metaphor and such a funny, heartwarming, instantly charming man.
That's Michelle Gerber Klein with her book Charles James, Portrait of an Unreasonable Man, which is all about fame, fashion, and art, and it looks absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you
for coming
much.
Up and joining us.
Thank you.
And I hope that you come back again with another book.
I will.
Well, here I have a giant of the literary world.
Oh, my God, really?
Yes, you have to sit closer, Jules. You are. You're a giant.
Okay.
Speak into the mic. We have Jules Feiffer, who never, ever stops working.
Never.
And you are here with this book, which I find absolutely fascinating. It is a graphic novel.
Okay. Can I put this on so I can hear you?
Yeah. No, I don't want you to hear me. Read my lips. Read my lips, Jules Feiffer.
Anyway.
There. Is that helpful? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. Hi, Jules.
I hope you have something worth saying.
I hope so. I can't promise anything, though. But you do. So that's good. The Ghost Script is your latest book, and this is one of the most fascinating times in American history because it's about the HUAC, the House Un-American Activities Committee. Now, how do you write a cartoon book, a graphic novel?
A graphic novel, madam. I'll have you
know.
Oh,
gosh, don't act so offended.
Don't confuse this with a comic book.
It's not a comic book.
Just because it looks like a comic book.
It does kind of look like a comic book.
It's... But it's pretentious, which a comic book is not.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yes.
So I'm glad that we got that out of the way.
Those of us who get pretentious enough to call ourselves graphic novelists are very proud of the title.
But I love this, that it's about that period of time, Blacklist Hollywood.
1953, when I came of age politically in many ways, and I had just gotten out of the Army, and I went to hear Jerome Robbins testify before the House Un-American Activities Committee, and I also went to a memorial service where Clifford Odets got up and spoke movingly and brilliantly and tearfully about the deceased, who was an actor named J. Edward Bromberg, who was with Odets in the organization of the Group Theater. And then a week later, appeared before the House Un-American Activities Committee and named names and named J. Edward Bromberg as the man who recruited him to the Communist Party. So I'm writing about that time.
Clifford Odets did that?
Yes, Clifford Odets.
Do you know that I have an original painting by Clifford Odets that he gave my father?
Really?
Yes, I do. I'll bring it over and show it to you sometime.
I would love to see it.
Yes.
Well, he was a hero of my youth. And
yes. Waiting for Lefty,
Lefty
of
Golden
course.
Golden Boy and all of those things.
Absolutely brilliant.
But the level of betrayal that time was so affecting to me that if, from that day to this, it's how I began to view my own country.
We're speaking with Jules Feiffer here in his new book, The Ghost Script, which deals with the Hollywood blacklist period.
Yes.
Do you find, and this is a very leading question, do you find that it's relevant in today's politics?
Only in this way.
Everything?
In the 1950s, Joe McCarthy was a senator. Now, Joe McCarthy is president.
Wow.
So that's the difference. And the level of danger inherent in that may be fatal. We'll see.
It's wonderful, Jules. And as always, it's a pleasure to see you, to hear you, to talk to you, to sit next to you at theater things. And I've known you for...
I know, weeks.
Forever. No, shut up. I've known you for almost my whole life, and it's such a pleasure to see
you
and to always have you here with a new work and supporting the East Hampton Library.
Well, supporting East Hampton Library and supporting Bay Street Theater and supporting all the wonderful institutions out here that are dear to my heart.
Well, Jules Feiffer, thank you so much for speaking with us. This is Bridget Leroy on WPPB 88.3 FM. And we have here another local. We've got the Bonnick table going on here.
I don't want to sit near this man.
You know, it's Monty Farber. And Jules doesn't mean that. He doesn't.
He married me.
He married you?
Well, I think he did.
Did you perform the wedding?
Yes, I did.
Come closer.
Yes, I did.
You married Jules and
Joan? I did, and
Joan.
Yes.
And then it turned out not to be legal.
Oh, come on.
No, that's
really?
Why we had to have a real we had to have
You
a
had
real,
to have a real one.
The yes. judge from
Well,
Shelter
speaking of marriage, we have your lovely wife, Amy Zerner, joining
she
you
did,
now.
Amy didn't marry me.
No, Amy didn't marry you, but she was
but
probably
she
there.
But she will if he asks.
Yeah, Well, I'll marry you. I'm also an ordained minister, and so is Wally Smith. We could marry everyone here. It'd be like a Mooney thing.
The Hamptons, known for their communes.
Joan and I enjoyed getting married so much that we've now done it twice. Oh. And we want Monty to do it every other year.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's wonderful.
I'm available.
Well, we're going to shift over from the wonderful Jules Pfeiffer. And do you want to give your...
I'm being told to get out of town.
Yeah, you are.
All right, goodbye.
But don't get up with your headphones on, because that you should. The passing of the headphones is a big thing here at WPPB.
I've been castrated.
Oh, no.
You've been thrown out of bed.
So we have here... Monty Farber and Amy Zerner.
Hi, Bridgie. Great seeing you,
Jules. Hi, Monty. Hi, Amy. Hi, I love you guys. I've known you. I really have known you my whole life. But you're only a few years. I don't want to make it sound like
you were 5 years old.
I was 5 years old.
I was a teenager.
Yeah, and you told me that flying car story, which affected me. You said your car flew to Montauk.
It's true.
And I totally believed you.
The one and only time I did that.
Yes, sure. You know, having Amy Zerner as your occasional babysitter, she would hold seances, she would tell me ghost stories. I was like, you made me a nervous child.
I'm steaming up. But I've always been the same, right, Bridget?
Yeah, no, you're wonderful, and I adore you. And Monty, I remember seeing you with your robot at, like, yes. Trax in the early 80s or something. What was it?
The Me, Myself, and I band.
I can't believe how far we go back.
It's a colorful journey we've had.
But you're, yes, colorful like your purple hair, which everybody knows. And the two of you have made a career out of helping people navigate through life using astrology and karma cards, your tarot deck, which, I remember you reading tarot, again, at 6 years old. Oh, I drew the death card for you, Bridget. I was like, what does that mean, Amy?
Now go to sleep.
Now go. I'll turn off. Like, no, but I had other ones who read me things like Telltale Heart. You were mild compared to the Lovecraftian.
The Grateful Dead wrote, "What a long, strange trip it's been," about us.
Yes, they did. So you're here tonight, though, with your karma cards and your enchanted tarot.
This was our first book, which came out in 1988, so it's the 30th anniversary edition. It's now published by Sterling, which is Barnes & Noble. And The Enchanted Tarot is on its 25th anniversary edition.
Well, actually, I did something about that last year, I think in The Independent.
Yes.
Because it's a new and improved. It's a bigger, it's not just a tarot deck. It has...
Yeah. It's a better book, and it comes with a little
bag.
A pouch, a bag.
A pretty little velvet bag. A purple velvet bag,
like
which everybody
hair,
needs.
For those of you in Radio Land.
Yes, of course. Well, you have so many books out, though. I mean, how do you...
We do. We have our own shelf at every Barnes & Noble store.
You have your own shelf at every Barnes & Noble
store? Yeah, the top shelf of the
spirituality. No, seriously. Now, when you did Karma Cards, you had no idea.
I had no idea.
That was going to happen.
It was the year Nancy Reagan was revealed to be interested in astrology. So the first printing went from 15,000 to 50,000.
That's just amazing. But you guys have done... I mean, over the years, you've done cruises where you've done... Can we talk about Frookies?
Oh my God.
It's only because I love you guys. I loved fortune frookies. I love that idea.
You love to eat.
Yeah, it was like a magic eight ball, but edible. I thought
fortune
that was fantastic.
Frookies, the game you love to eat.
All right, the game you love to eat.
It's just amazing. But you guys have come so far. I mean, what do you see with the current? I don't know. People seem so disenchanted, and you guys are makers of enchantment.
Well,
where can they go to get that?
We think things are going to get a lot better.
We feel like you really focus on love, the people you love, the animals you love, the work you love, and that brings you back.
The food you love, because you have a cookbook as well.
An astrology cookbook called Signs of Season. But we feel that, you know, we lived through the 60s and we brought the sensibility of the 60s, and now we're in our 60s. And we've never changed.
You can use these oracles to center yourself. It's like a meditation ritual, and that's very important.
Of course.
Now when you're feeling out of whack.
And today's a solar eclipse.
That's right.
Is it?
New moon.
Yes, a partial solar eclipse. Which means everybody should be very careful not to let their emotions trip themselves up.
Oh, that's great.
So feel positive, because there's a lot of great things going on.
I think one of the wonderful things is so many people are into astrology and the tarot now. Like when we were young and we got into that, and and yoga and all kinds of positive things. So, yeah. I mean, that's what
So people are looking. They're looking for ways of being enchanted, and they look need look no further than Monty Farber and Amy Zerner and your collection of amazing books, and I love you guys.
Thank you, honey.
Thank you so much. Great seeing you.
Thank you, Bridget.
Thank you. And I'm here, this is Bridget Leroy, your host, usually staff of the Independent Utility Infielder, as they say, and instead here tonight representing WPPB FM, 88.3 FM. Sorry, there's a little mayhem going on here. Hi, how are you? I'm so glad. Please take a seat, put on some headphones. This is Jean McCullough.
Yes.
And your book is All Happy Families.
Yes.
But this will help if you put on the headphones so you...
Yeah, I can't hear
it's
damn
like, yeah, you won't be able to. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm
nice
fine.
To meet
How are
you.
You?
Great. And is Phyllis going to be joining us?
I don't know.
Come on up,
I
Phyllis.
I don't know.
This is wonderful. Now, you've had many, many years editing at the Paris Review.
Yes, I was at the Paris Review for 10 years as an editor.
And now this, you have written a memoir.
I've written a memoir,
and
yes.
Tell me about it.
sure. The book opens on a weekend in 1983 when I was married. I was very young at the time.
I'm sure.
And
a baby.
So it was two very different families coming together for an event at a house in East Hampton on the beach. And my father ended up dying that weekend.
Right.
So
he had a heart attack.
No. He had a stroke.
Oh, okay.
2 days before the wedding. And the backstory on that is that my mother had tried to sober him up. He was a big drinker. And did it without any medical detox, because in those days,
right.
I guess, people didn't know to do that. And as a consequence, he had a stroke.
Wow.
So I was on my way out with my fiancé from Manhattan to East Hampton, and we stopped at exit 70, as one does, and
right.
used the little payphone to call and say we were running late, and the housekeeper said, go straight to Southampton Hospital, your father's had a stroke. So we went there. And
this is your wedding, I mean, 24,
yes.
48 hours before your wedding.
48 hours before my wedding. My mother had found my father that morning. As the tent was going up on the lawn, the ambulance was going out the driveway. And my fiancé's family was on their way. They were already on the ferry coming from Maine to arrive at what they thought was their son's wedding, the first wedding in both of our families.
Now, I do have to ask, we also have sitting here Phyllis Chase, one who I have not seen in over 30 years,
yeah.
but I remember you like yesterday.
Right.
We spent a week together at a place. I won't
yes.
say where it was. At a spa.
A relaxing retreat.
At a spa. Just,
spa.
Just
yeah,
in case
yeah,
anyone
like,
thinks
like,
it was like rehab. Right.
Work, yeah.
It wasn't rehab. We were together at a spa, but... Phyllis, were you guys friends back then?
Yes.
So were you at the wedding? Were you part?
No.
We knew each other as kids, and then we sort of hadn't seen each other in a long time.
I mean, their house was the iconic 4th of July house. They had a huge 4th of July party every year that we all look forward to.
Amazing.
And I don't know if you referenced that, because
I
haven't yet read her book, but I just bought it. I'm so excited.
Oh, that's so amazing. So when did this book come out?
It's coming out on Tuesday.
Oh, okay, so
it hasn't come out yet. But one of the things that was lovely for me in writing this book was really to get a chance to write about our East Hampton when we grew up, when it really was a very different place
yes.
than, of course, it is now.
Phyllis's mother, of course, Faith Chase, has
yes.
had the store in East Hampton.
You remember? Wow.
Everybody
Amazing.
Remembers. Everybody remembers what Main Street East Hampton used to be like.
Yes.
Everybody who's been out here for
she
a while.
Tried to start a cottage industry.
Yes. Wonderful.
Yes.
It was amazing. And what else was there? Cheese cupboard, Whimsies, Pets Painted with Love,
I
remember?
Know. I called my sister because I said, when I was writing this, and I said, what was that name of that place we used to get all of our little turquoise
Whimsies,
jewelry?
Wasn't it?
She goes, no, it was Whitmore's, was
yep.
it? And then Whimsies was right there.
Right.
And Marley's was
Marley's,
the stationery
right.
store.
Of course.
The only place you can buy toys, and Mr. Marley
exactly.
hated kids.
Exactly. He was in the wrong business.
So is a lot of the stuff in your book?
A lot of...
I mean, I'm sure it's a really... more about your father and the marriage.
Well, it's the first section is about that weekend, and then it follows my in-laws up to Maine, and then it returns to the house at the time that we were selling the house.
And we're speaking with Jean McCulloch, the former... Do I say your name right?
It's okay. Say it that way.
How do you say it?
When you read the book, you say will it. Find out that my mother used to be insistent that it was Jeanne.
Jeanne.
Because she was from a French family. Jeanne. But nobody's ever pronounced it that way.
But am I saying your
way.
Last name
so
right?
Everybody calls me Jay.
Am I saying McCulloch right?
Yes, you are.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it's the Scottish... So spelling of McCulloch.
Well, I have a capital R in my name, but people tend to say Leroy, and I just kind of let it slide.
Oh,
so
well,
it's Leroy.
You see?
But I'm speaking with Jeanne McCulloch, who's the former managing editor of the Paris Review and has this amazing memoir based in East Hampton. And I can't thank you enough. I want to talk to Phyllis a little bit about the upcoming event you have on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Tell me about this.
Well, I'm
fantastic.
Just so excited, you know.
And I can't believe I'm seeing you after all this time.
It's amazing, you know, and especially to be here with Jay. It's like old home week.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited about my event on Wednesday at Guildhall. 7 o'clock, the doors open to a silent auction in the lobby, pop-up shops in the green room. You get to go backstage. And then outside there's a Greek food truck.
And there's a
but
movie.
This is all in, before the screening of a movie called The Letters,
which
the
is
the untold story of Mother Teresa. It's a $30 million film with a great cast, won awards at festivals, but it was released during the San Bernardino mass shooting, so nobody went to the theaters.
Right.
Nobody saw this film. I saw the film, and the producers asked me to put up money. After I said, no way, I don't have that kind of money. After I saw the movie, I was so touched. It blew my heart wide open. That I put up a lot of money for its national re-release. So they let me have the national release is going to be September 4th, but they let me have it in my hometown. So I put this event together in 3 weeks, and you know I need people to buy tickets. So you know, please.
And where do they go to buy? What is the name of your organization again?
Well, it's the Unstoppable Foundation. But if you go to page 4 in the Star,
right.
It gives me my email and.
I'm sorry, I threw you for a loop there.
Oh, God,
No,
sorry.
That's good. No, that's fine.
You know, PCIN, it stands for Phyllis Chase in East Hampton at Gmail.
That's
you can
great.
Email me.
Or just show up at
the box office
or,
at 7
yes,
o'clock.
Yes, I was going to say Guildhall.
It's only $25, and there's a garden.
But the money
goes to the Unstoppable Foundation and the Mully Foundation.
Right, the Mully Foundation as well, because there's also a ticket that is more expensive, a $100 ticket.
Right.
Which is the one I got.
Oh, right, Bridget,
thank you.
Because
I'm trying to support, but it goes to a different organization.
It goes to the Unstoppable, yes. And I just found out that my dear friend who's standing right behind me,
yes.
Gerald, who's written this fabulous, lots of fabulous
yes.
books, just gave me $25,000 as matching funds.
How fantastic.
Hello, breaking
that's
news.
That's a dear friend.
That is
he
dear,
gets an
dear
extra
friend.
Dear in that.
Thank you both for coming and talking
you.
To me. And I wish you the best with your book release.
I appreciate
and
it.
And thank you for supporting
much.
The East Hampton Library.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And
you were so wonderful
to talk
see you
to us.
Talk to you.
You too, and I'll see you on Wednesday
thank you.
Night.
Great.
Thanks,
I
Phyllis.
Can't wait.
Bye, Jeanne. Nice to meet you. Hi. Please come on up. Hi.
Should I have him put on the
yes.
headphones?
Yes.
I just told her that you did.
Yes,
this
yes.
is Gerald who did the 25,000.
Gerald, you are wonderful.
Let me just go back to my...
Yes.
And this is amazing. I saw this. You're going to have trouble unless you take your hat off. Well, hi. Phyllis? Yes, sorry. Michael, please come on up. I have with me now, hi, it's Bridget Leroy at WPBB, and I have with me two wonderful writers, Gerald Spraeregen, did I say right?
That's correct, dear.
Yes, thank you. And Michael Isikoff with his book, Russian Roulette, The Inside Story of Putin's War on America and the Election of Donald Trump. So this is kind of a good pairing because you have your drawings of artists depicting Donald Trump.
Right.
And this is one of the hottest books out there right now. So I'm really grateful to have you
thank
both
you.
Here kind of wrapping this up for me.
Right.
Uh-huh. Why don't you interview each other? I'm like exhausted. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
No. Michael, if you can go first, please tell me about, I've already had a deep discussion with Malcolm Nance.
Right.
Tell me what... more about your take on this. And
well, I think we're actually coming to a critical crossroads in the next month. I think the Mueller probe is There's a good chance we're going to see a lot of fireworks just over the next few weeks. Obviously, we've got the Manafort trial, somebody we write about extensively in the book. We're going to get a verdict in a couple of weeks.
And they've called a guy from East Hampton. They called a landscaper from Bridgehampton as one of the witnesses. We're writing about it in the Independent.
Oh, are you? Great. But also, I think there's a good chance we could see Mueller is going to do an obstruction report within the next few weeks, and it looks like Roger Stone's going to get indicted. So this is sort of a crescendo for Trump, and I think he's going to, he wants to wrap things as much of it as he can in the next few weeks because he doesn't want to be accused of dumping stuff during the election campaign.
Right, of course.
So
I think this must be like wonderful fodder for anyone who is a illustrator. Have you had nonstop material to go on for your book, Gerald?
Basically,
America the Great.
America the Great. I've done about 25 books, and in this book, I am an editor. I have chosen the 52 top cartoonists in the world.
Right, Pulitzer Prize winning.
22 of them have won Pulitzer Prizes, and I've just approached 52. Asked them to give me their interpretation of Donald Trump. Not one has turned me down.
Are there any positive?
Very little.
I think I'd like to get you to illustrate the paperback edition of Russian
Roulette.
Oh,
good. I'm doing a hookup here.
There, but
I disagree with you a little. I don't think Trump is going to testify. He talks about wanting to testify, but he's too smart to testify.
No. I agree with that, but I don't think Mueller needs his testimony to write his report.
Right.
If he can't get it, he can't get it. He writes his report based on the evidence he's got. And,
He's
got a lot more evidence than he's shown to date.
That's for sure.
Both of you are established writers. We have next to you a woman who's here with her first book. Carola Lovering, am I saying your name right? Yes. And maybe you guys can, first of all, tell me a little bit about your book, and maybe you can get some good advice from these armchair generals who have published many, many books. Tell me about it.
Absolutely.
What makes you think she needs it?
Yeah, she might not. She might give you guys advice.
I would love it. So Tell Me Lies is a novel. It's about a toxic relationship. And the chapters alternate perspectives between Lucy, the protagonist, and then Steven, who is her love interest and kind of the anti-hero of the novel. That's the central thread of the novel, is their relationship, their kind of unhealthy, toxic, on and off relationship over the course of 7 years. But it's also a little bit of a thriller, and it's a coming-of-age story.
Oh, wonderful. How long have you been working on this?
Excuse me?
How long have you been working on this?
I started working on it in 2013, and it just came out earlier this summer in June.
That's wonderful.
So I was working on it.
And it's called Tell Me You Love Me. It says Tell Me Lies on the cover.
Lies.
Oh, it is called Tell Me Lies. It's called Tell Me Lies, but then the lies is crossed out, and it says Tell Me Love Me.
Just Tell
Very
Me Lies.
Very clever.
Inspired by the Fleetwood Mac song.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah. And
so I've got one question. Yeah. When do you sell it to HBO or Showtime?
Fingers crossed that, that'll happen. It's too soon to tell, but that's the hope.
It's always the hardest to interview journalists because they want to ask questions.
Oh, yeah.
That's Michael Isikoff talking with his book, Russian Roulette. I imagine that you have more than enough material, both of you, to get a whole other book going, like, immediately. Are you already working on another one?
The great thing about the book is it came out in March, and we actually were able to anticipate a lot of what came out afterwards. One example, we have a whole section in the book about Maria Butina, the Russian agent who was arrested just a couple of weeks ago.
Right, of course.
Yeah, and how she was operating.
But you already have the chapter.
We have a whole section about how she cultivated relationships with the NRA and Republican activists, and the critical role she played for the Kremlin in getting Trump on the record during the campaign saying he would roll back sanctions against Russia, something that got no reporting during the campaign, but was widely noticed by the Kremlin and Putin at the time.
Wow, that's just amazing.
Of course, he never did.
How are we doing
well,
on time?
Well, he tried to. He absolutely tried to, but he got stopped. Yeah.
Wow.
That was the agenda to roll back sanctions.
This has been the most amazing evening. I can't believe how fast it's gone by. We only have about a minute left, so this has been Authors Night. Is it, for any of you, is it? Have you been here before, ever?
No,
it's
haven't.
Your first time. You've been here before. And
I have not been here before, but it was great. I met Robert Caro, one of my author heroes of all time, which was great.
And you have a dinner.
And I have a dinner tonight.
And who's hosting your dinner?
Somebody named Norby Weisberg. I don't know him, but I will be meeting him this evening.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
And
what do you think the ultimate outcome with Mr. Trump will be?
You know, if I knew the answer to that, I could make a lot of money in Vegas. But I think that it seems unsustainable. But, you know, who knows? We don't yet know how this plays out.
I want to thank everybody here. We are running out of time.
Okay.
Carola, is that how I say your name?
Carola.
Lovering with your new book.
Thank you.
And Gerald Sprayrigan,
thank
you so much. And Michael Isikoff with Russian Roulette, the book everyone's talking about here. Thank you all so much.
Thank you. It's been
an incredible night here at Authors Night. I've been here representing WPPB 88.3 FM, usually a utility infielder at the Independent newspaper, and I've been honored, Wally Smith, to be able to sub for Bonnie Grice tonight. Thank you so much for everyone. And tomorrow's the Children's Fair. Don't miss that. Thank you very much. Coming from the 555 Fields in Amagansett, this is Bridget Leroy signing off.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. How many authors did you have to interview?
Thank you.